This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings, welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Wars podcast with Jim and Tom. And Tom, it's our Christmas episode because we're going to be reviewing Fat Man today, starring Mel Gibson, but we'll get to that in a little bit. We've got some news, and then we're going to do the Active Geek Network Mando minutes as we do. The biggest news in what I never thought would happen news is Warner Brothers decides that they're going to release all their movies in theaters and on HBO Max the same day, which kind of brings me to 2 points. The first point is it's what we've been talking about since Corona happened, and this is the slow death of the beginning of the slow death for movie theaters, and it's terrible. And we'll talk about that in a second. But my second point, which is connected to that, is if this is the slow death of movie theaters, it could open it up for the revitalization of movie theaters, or the second coming of movie theaters by smaller independent companies, A24, who constantly are putting out Oscar-nominated movies, but they're not being released large scale, right? They're all in the big cities and the artsy cities, and you're going to see it when you see it. So it's going to open up for that, or it leaves the door open for Disney to come in and put its Disney cape on and save the movie theaters. Because they're not doing anything. You know, it's the ball's in their court, right? Because Mulan came out on Disney Plus, $30, crashed and burned.
Yep.
They postponed Black Widow until TBD.
Yeah.
Which this week, I think they're going to reveal that they're going to release it.
I think they're going to put up a fight they're not going to let this go. Hope not. I think it'd be the most sensible thing to do is to, say, oh, you know, if you're going to do it, we're going to do it. You know, I think it's a great thing to do. So
a lot of people, like I've read a lot of articles that are like, oh, they're stupid for doing this, but they were the first ones to say, let's put the biggest blockbuster of 2020 out in theaters with Tenet. And it didn't perform as well as they were hoping it to. And they were thinking maybe a Christopher Nolan movie could bring out everybody. Well, no. Wonder Woman's not bringing out everybody because we're getting worse. And it's only going to get worse because it's the colder months for most states. So as the country continues to get worse, the moviegoers are going to continue to be scared, or the movie theaters are going to be closed or short-staffed.
It's a good
idea for now. I feel like I can see the world getting back to normal a year from now, or maybe a little bit earlier, and Warner Brothers kind of backing out on that release, because there's big movies that are coming out. We're talking Godzilla versus Kong, The Matrix, Mortal Kombat, Suicide Squad, and Dune. Like, Dune's the biggest one.
Right.
Which is crazy.
I don't know. Like, I guess they'll do it for now, I think. Yeah. I think they're always going to have that in their back pocket. Who survives this, though?
I know AMC is not going to survive it.
Right. I mean,
they came out, they released a diss track. Like, they came out and they were going hard at Warner Brothers and Warner Media, saying how selfish they were and how they don't care about the people who are running the theaters and the people who are rely on the theaters. But, you know,
I don't think
I go to a movie theater where they're not sanitizing it every day. They can't sanitize it between shows. I catch COVID, the movie theater is liable.
Right.
So there's impending doom either way for a movie theater, because there's so many people in this world today that are sue happy that once they watch one episode of The Doctors, they can find out that they can sue the person who gave them corona. So it's a crazy, crazy time. Do you think that this is the death of movie theaters?
Of a certain type of movie theater. I think the more smaller, niche-y movie theater might, you know, I guess the more mature movie theater might become the thing to do. At some point, I think people want to have the giant movie theaters, the Lowe's in our area, the Lowe's theaters and 3D and all that. But, you know, also I want to go see something on a small screen, but I don't think they could handle the capacity, you know what I mean, of people going out. So we'll see. I don't like a big Marvel movie that comes out and, you know, people lined up around the block. A small theater is not going to be able to handle that. And many small theaters are not going to be able to handle that. It's going to have to be, there has to be big theaters for that to work. But
And I don't know if 1 year is going to make a difference. Like, this could be like the, we'll take a year off, we'll close our doors, we'll come back in 2022, we'll lick our wounds and we'll feel better because, you know, there's more Marvel stuff, there's more DC stuff, the Batman's coming out. But this is a big, big deal. It's huge for us because we're going to review all those movies. We've talked about most of them. And I don't know if it's going to be – like Wonder Woman's going to be the sample for me. Like I enjoy going to the theaters to see these big spectacles. And Wonder Woman was a movie that I was looking forward to seeing on theater because, you know, some of it was shot in 4D or 4K. You know, the vivid colors. I don't know if my Roku TV is going to be able to catch up with the 4K stuff. So this will be the first sample size. Dune, I need to see that in theaters.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to brave it in October of next year, and I'm going to go and see that in theaters. I need to see that in theaters.
Yeah. I, you know, there are these movies that are, you know, designed for that. But Wonder Woman, you know, we don't all, me included, don't have $10,000 TVs that do 4K Ultra and, you know, a movie going experience. But I'm trying to figure out who makes it. Like, are banks going to foreclose on these giant theaters, or are they just going to give them
like rent forgiveness?
Well, like, I don't know how that works. How does it work for them? Are they going to give them some time to come back and pay off their bills? Because they're just sitting there. They're just giant empty spaces right now.
Yep. Where you can rent them for $100 and play Mario Kart.
Right. Yeah.
That's what people are doing. But like, when, not to get political, not, this is not the Corona hotline here, but when the PPP loans came out, the big companies who went for those PPP loans got shit for going for them because they're $1 billion, $1 million companies. Whereas the, you know, Rick Smith's plumbing needs the PPP loan to get, you know, put food on their table. If AMC does that, it's going to be the same thing. But AMC is a little different than like In-N-Out or whoever, who was it? Ruth Chris, who are still open.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still making money, just not the money they were hoping to, where AMC is like, we're going to have to file for bankruptcy.
Yeah, they have no way to earn an income.
Yeah, and I feel bad because I'm a moviegoer. You're a moviegoer. We enjoy going to see these things, and you know, it kind of sucks. And more locally, I know in our area in Camden County and Gloucester County, there's a ton of like zombie shopping centers.
Yep.
You know, I'm thinking in Berlin, we're going super hyper local, but in where I grew up, the town that I grew up. Everything is like there was a Kmart and an Acme. They went out of business and that whole plaza is gone. Could this open up these zombie properties to be turned into a drive-in? Could this be the second coming of a drive-in?
I think that's the smartest thing to do at this point. I mean, what else are they going to do? They could even just erect one or two screens out in a parking lot. They all have these enormous giant parking lots. They could erect two screens, show movies, and do it, you know, the old school, you know, drive-in way and subsidize their income. It may not be what they want to do in the future, but I would do it fast. I mean, they have that drive-in theater still open down, you know, by us.
In Vineland.
Yeah. So I think that's the right thing to do. And I don't know. I mean, what's it take? I have no idea. Yeah. What, I mean, what are the new codes that they have to establish? And, you know,
are they closed in the rain? You know, know, it, like, does weather affect it? Like, I haven't been to a drive-in in the rain. I've never been to a drive-in in a rain. Right. Never been to it in the winter. So, like, does it affect that? I'm not sure. But it's it'd be interesting to see. I know, again, local reference, but there's a spot near us, kind of in between where we both live, that was a caterer. And they couldn't do weddings, and they got crafty, and they bought these big screens, and they brought projectors, and they did drive-through.
Yep.
Or drive-in at their parking lot, and they had food trucks, and it works. So it, the template's out there. It just sucks because these huge spectacles aren't going to be enjoyed as they should.
I mean, you're more closed in or shut in than I am. I mean, I have to go to work to a place for work. You and your wife are kind of work at home at this point, but
yeah.
I do that, and you know, my girlfriend works out of the house, and then even when we were like really quarantined, we went out every night and tried to look for something to do to keep the kids' minds off of going crazy, and so it's nice to hear about those places that have come up with ideas, drive through ideas, and I think that's important. I think that's what needs to still keep going on. Like, I'm saying do it the right way, mask, hand sanitizer, clean up, do all the right things, but keep coming up with inventive inventive ways to skirt the current, restrictions put up, but if you do it right and do it clean where they don't have any way of like shutting you down, then, we'll see.
I think like if you're a theater, you have to get creative. You have to play Battleship with like your seating arrangement. So like if you're in Theater One and Wonder Woman's shown in Theater One, then every 6 feet, again, social distancing is going to be unoccupied. And then I would close that theater down and get one of those sprayers that companies are getting to disinfect the whole room. And it takes about 4 hours to fully, disinfect the room. So they disinfect that room. They shut that down for 4 hours and they alternate theaters. So you're going to limit the customers coming in, but you're still going to be able to have that cash flow coming in. You're going to still be able to cater to the movie theater, to the movie companies and succeed. Like, not thrive, but at least make it through another rough year.
Well, hopefully it's not a rough year, but we'll see about that. I don't know, in general, I was at a point where I didn't like the movie going experience. The movie going experience had become more of a chore than it needed to be. I did it most of the time by myself, which wasn't that bad, but bringing multiple people, it kind of got boring. And, they have the dinner and a show type of thing over in PA and stuff. So I wanted to get into that, and they just updated the menus in most places. And but maybe this will push them to do the right thing, and whoever hangs on and survives, and whoever's got the correct backing, and maybe they will survive. I think it'll maybe they come out of this with better ideas and a way to make this a better experience. We'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. We might be just focusing on our area because we're kind of in the hub, and like certain states are thriving and still having have blockbuster movies hit their hit their theaters. But this is the future. The one huge company pulled all their pretty much said you can watch it from home, and they're going to make money regardless because they own HBO.
Yeah.
So they're going to raise those subscriptions. They're trying to do a worldwide rollout before all this stuff happens. So they're just like, this is the future. We're going to make our movies. We're going to distribute it. And a household's going to pay $15 as opposed to $50.
Yeah.
And more people are going to get that. So it's just going to – it's going to suck. It's going to be I'm excited to see these movies and not have to – because I know 2021 stacked, and I was going to have to pay a ton of money for these movies. So – my bank account's gonna feel good, but
I
as
hope,
a reviewer,
I mean, like, I don't know how this would work. I don't know how much money actual production companies are bringing in. I don't think they're making a ton of money. Because they're competing with small, you know, with quote unquote smaller companies like a Netflix or something like that actually making or producing movies. So, like, but if you're, if Time, like you said, Time Warner is different, and so is Disney because they have their own apps. But if you're an, like Universal or something like that, or another big production company that is dependent on, you know, theater gross, which all these companies are still highly dependent on people going to a theater and seeing their movie.
Yeah.
They will make a lot more money that way. You should do everything you can to make sure there's something exists out there. I don't know how they do that. I don't know if they're willing to, you know, to build their own theaters or to subsidize other theaters or a company like an AMC is a national company, as opposed to somebody
else. Cinemark.
Cinemark, yeah. Lowe's. I know they're everywhere. So I don't know.
And Regal.
I mean, it's a unique company or a unique set of circumstances that I don't think any other. I mean, a lot of companies are going through the same thing, but you know, these are so much different because they just sit there empty. It's just giant,
yeah,
empty spaces paying tons of money for land that they can't use. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it also kind of, as we kind of dwindle out, move out of this this topic, but it also changes in my mind the landscape for award season.
Yeah.
Are these streaming service movies primarily being viewed through streaming service? Are they going to be eligible for a nomination if they get like a small theater release? It's all dependent on that. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is shout out to Run P. We haven't had a chance to talk about Run P.
No.
But if you're going to see movies, use Run P.
Yeah.
And support them because they've helped us through our podcast journey, and we want to support them as well.
And we were company big to give fans, us something. It's just now we don't go out. So.
Yeah.
Run P was my favorite app for a long time. So.
And now it's just collecting dust.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go. Let's enter. Let's leave pessimism place. And let's move into spoiler territory as we are going to break down a little bit of The Mandalorian.
Yep.
25 minutes of an episode that we got, directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, it went by so much faster.
It
was short, but it went by faster than I thought it would.
You know, it felt like an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Where like
22 minutes.
I'm watching it after. A spoiler alert, I was spoiled and you were spoiled immediately.
Yeah.
Like 9 in the morning, we knew what was happening.
Yeah. By a fan of the show and friend who, Pace, who sent out a text like, why is Boba Fett trending? Like, you idiot. You know why Boba Fett's trending.
Right. We've been talking about it on Active Geek in here for 6 months. So... going into the episode, we knew Boba Fett was going to show up at this point. We didn't know what the tragedy meant. Could have meant, Boba Fett's going to get killed. Baby Yoda could get killed. Now Grogu could get killed.
Yeah.
But what we got was what a lot of people are calling a filler episode, but what I am calling that bridge to bringing Moff Gideon back in. So we've got Din Djarin arriving to the Jedi rock, placing Grogu on the rock. And then Slave One shows up.
Yeah.
And it's Boba Fett, like a badass Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
Like smashing stormtroopers' faces with the butt end of a club. And then Fennec Sand is back with Ming-Na Wen. And then we see the Dark Troopers. And then the episode ends.
Yeah.
Like they take Grogu, which at first a part of my heart was like, oh no. Like it sunk to like the bottom of my body. And I was like, the Dark Trooper is going to drop Grogu. Something's going to happen. When he's, like, flying away and, like, you hear Grogu screaming through, like, the Mando's, like, heat vision. And I'm like, oh, this is it. They get there, and then we see Moff Gideon pull out the Darksaber, which was very cool. I love the retractability of it. And then, you know, they stun him, and
Yeah. Well, he's, you see him just tossing troopers around. The Grogu is just like slamming troopers against the wall. Just not even like defensively. He was just seeing if he could do it. It seemed like
he was toying with them. Yeah. It was the motions that he was using. Very Sith-like.
Yeah, it's there.
It was very, very Darth Vader, Kylo Ren-like, where, like, he's looking like he's trying to choke him. Like, he's choking that one trooper, and then he, like, throws them together.
Yeah.
It reminded me that, like, maybe a Sith is going to answer that call that we were talking about.
There's a... There's a book. It's one of now, you know, it's called, the Legends. The non-canon stuff is legend stuff. And it's called like Dark Revolutions, like
okay,
it's Yoda Dark Revelations, and for what it's about is like Darth Tyrannus or Tyrannus is trying to like convince him to go to the dark side.
Is it called Yoda Dark Rendezvous?
Yeah, that might be it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm going to spoil some of it, but only a little bit. I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head. But basically, his old Padawan is trying to convince him to go to the dark side. And for just a second, Yoda, because Yoda has never thought about going. He's a light side being. Like, he's never, it never occurred to him because he doesn't want power. Like, everything, he realizes. Dark side means nothing to him because he doesn't want what the dark side offers. He doesn't want power. He doesn't need any of those things. Yeah. So for a second, though, he lets Dark Tyrannus see what happens if he like was able to, if he went to the dark side, and you like it's a like a short story, like 40. It's like a like two chapters of the book is just him as a dark, like as a Sith. Just ripping through everybody. He kills everybody. Like, takes out Sidious. Like, no, you know, just goes, walks in and just, you know, force chokes Sidious. And, like, you know, redirects his lightning. But it's, you know, how those old Legends books, a lot of them were written really good. I mean, they're all really good books. So, but that's how I felt about Grogu. Is like, in this case, you know, Yoda's got 900 years on him. But... You know, it could be like they are super force sensitive beings. We don't know anything about them.
Yeah,
and could go either way, and he could, you know, which makes me think he contacted somebody. He communed with the Force on that rock, on that Seer Stone or whatever. So, I'm still thinking. I'm still trying to figure out who's coming.
Yeah, and we've got what, 2 episodes left.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So do we get it at the end of the season? Do we think we get an inkling of who's coming?
Yeah,
maybe I don't just know. A flash of a lightsaber.
I don't know. I mean, that
purple kyber crystal lights up, and it's Mace Windu.
I think it's gonna be Mace. I want it to be Mace Windu so bad.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We're gonna have, you know, I think next one's gonna be the heist episode where they get them back, and then. After that is, I don't even know. What is it going to be?
It's going to be of Endgame.
Yeah.
It's going to be, they're going to break out Bill Burr.
Right.
So Bill Burr and I'm thinking Clancy Brown show up in the next episode. And then we have Bill Burr. If Clancy Brown joins, he'll probably die. We've got Bo-Katan, Cara Dune, Grief Karga. Maybe Ahsoka shows back. Boba and Fennec. All with Din going after Moff Gideon to get one, the Darksaber, and Grogu.
Right. Yeah.
And then Thrawn shows up at the end of it.
Well, I think he's going to be once Moff Gideon dies, and I think that's going to have to happen, but I want to see 2 good episodes of Moff Gideon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's got the saber now. And it's such a powerful weapon, but he's not a Force user. So I want, you know, that's what I'm hoping in the last episode, we get a Force user that's trained, a Jedi or a Sith, come in and you know, save Grogu for themselves if it's a Sith, or save Grogu in general if it's the Jedi.
Yeah.
So
probably Ahsoka. It'll probably be Ahsoka showing up.
Because do you think do you think she sent him there as a test to see how, like,
maybe
how much he can get, like, tap into the Force and what powers he has?
Or to see who responds. Maybe she's looking for Ezra, right? So Ezra's with Thrawn.
Yeah.
So, and Ezra's a Jedi, so maybe they're monitoring the midichlorians in Ezra.
I think that's the best bet, since Thrawn is, we know Thrawn's coming. Well, we're pretty sure Thrawn's coming at some point. And
yeah, that's a huge name to drop to not reveal.
Right. And they're, Ezra and Thrawn should be in the same vicinity.
Yep.
Since Rebels, I guess they went to a different dimension or something. I don't even remember what they did in Rebels.
They went to, like, the Outer Rim.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe they're together on a ship. Maybe they're going through, like, maybe season 3 is their road. Maybe they're teamed up and they're
it's like Due Date with Zach Galifianakis and Robert Downey Jr. It's their buddy comedy. Yeah. Going through the galaxy. He's like, I survived Darth Vader. And he's like, well, I survived Darth Vader too. And it's just like, that's their bonding group over Darth Vader. I like this episode, number one. I think that this was too quick for my liking, but it really just, it redeemed Boba Fett's badassdom. Because we knew he was great.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know how great he was. And then he gets, like, he's fighting in, like, a terry cloth dress. And he's, you know, he just got out of the Sarlacc pit. And he's smashing all these troopers in the face, right? Crack it. Like, some of the most brutal kills I've ever seen in Star Wars.
Well, leave that to Rodriguez, right? I mean.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to do.
Planet Terror just with Temuera Morrison. And then he gets his suit back. And the knee cannons were awesome.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, he Captain Morgan's it and just presses the button.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't even know they existed, the knee cannons.
Yeah, but, me either. I'm waiting for him to, like, whip out, like, Heelys, and he's just start healing around and, like, shooting stuff out of there.
If you go look, remember he goes, if you know, at the end, he's like, I just wanted to show you, you know, this code. It's coded to my family. People had translated that code.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, it's like, it's more references to some of the legend stuff. Like, his dad was kidnapped too from the family farm, and, you know, kind of like Din Djarin's kind of story. It's the same. So, and there's, like, a couple other things, but
I think the legends are going to be canon within next year. Like, everything legends is going to be canon.
I mean, it all depends on how much Favreau is willing to bring in. It's all up to the, you know, he doesn't have 100% creative control, but if he's still making things as good as this season has been, they're going to let their story out there. Instead of creating new stuff, you have books. Just keep going to them. You know, keep cranking out the stories from these books, and I think that'll work.
There's a rumor that Lucasfilm is going to be doing an animated series based on the Old Republic, which is good. Which cool. You know, 800 years before the fall of the New Republic, and then they're already talking about doing rumored that Cara Dune's going to be the lead of a New Republic show. So there's a lot there where, you know, they could spin out. You could have a Bo-Katan series with the Nighthawks or Night Owls. You could have an Ahsoka series. You could do the Boba Fett series, which seems to be already happening. And you could do the Cara Dune series. But you still have Obi-Wan, which is going to be filming in January.
I wonder about the Cara Dune stuff. Only because what's her name?
Gina Carano?
Yeah. Everybody says, oh, it's because, you know, she did the pro-Trump stuff, but that's not really, you know, think whatever you want. I don't really care that you're pro-Trump. I mean, I think Trump's stupid, but it was the, like, she was also, you know, anti-mask and stuff like that. That's the dangerous stuff that worries me.
Anti-mask, anti-trans. She was anti a lot of things.
Yeah, which I'm actually glad that Rosario Dawson stuff came back, you know, investigated, went to court, and it's all been dropped without any money being paid out. So, and the person that filed the lawsuit was, you know, came out and said, you know, I think that was the case there, but we'll see. I'm glad that case, because, you know, I don't really hang on. I don't hero worship, which we'll get into in a little bit. Once something happens, and you know, I think people could change, but you know, if you don't change, you're off my, you know, I don't need to see your things. I don't need to be a customer of yours anymore. And that's kind of where Gina Carano is going for me. And Disney's usually pretty sensitive about that kind of stuff. So
very sensitive.
I'd be surprised if she makes it into her own series.
I kind of thought they were scrubbing the series of her.
Yeah.
Personally, because I was talking to Chuck about the episode, and I was saying the more characters they introduce into this series, the less I care about Cara Dune and Greef Karga. Yeah. They've become like one-off characters. They have less screen time than Quill in IG-11.
True.
You know what I mean? I feel more about them than I do about Cara and Greef. And Greef is just because he's not in the series. Mm-hmm. Cara Dune, she had a great run in the first season. And then, you know, she's Matt Dillon from Gunsmoke on Navarro. Like, I'm joining Trapper Wolf and the guy from KJ's Groceries or whatever it's called.
I'm not 100% sure when that was filmed or when this was filmed. So I'm sure they had... That was, I think, the peak that we got of her and her office on some planet was the show that we were going to get. It, you know, her riding out and catching bad guys once a week or something, you know, in that ilk, which would have been fine. But I don't know if Disney's going to greenlight something like that.
Yeah, with her, I'm not sure I want that series.
I don't know. I don't mind, you know, I like Westerns and stuff. I think that's what it would have been like, but I think that's what we're getting this season is kind of like that, you know.
That's the whole vibe of Mandalorian is essentially a Western.
Yeah. And I don't mind that Cara Dune could have been doing that, but cuz I think they would have wrote it well, and I think it, you know, I think the right people are in charge right now, but
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know if Disney has the heart to do that or is willing to give her a chance. And she's never apologized, which is kind of, you know, which is the first step she's never, take.
And she's never led something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's more of a character actor, supporting role. I don't see her as leading lady yet, not saying that she can't get to it, but when you have someone like Rosario Dawson, you have Katie Sackhoff, you could do series with them. And you have Carl Weathers. It could be a Greef Karga series co-starring Cara Dune.
Right, yeah. And look, if that was the original plan, was a Cara Dune spinoff series and whatever, blah, 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 scrap it if you have to. And start producing the Katie Sackhoff Bo-Katan story right now.
Yep.
Like, show her going back to Mandalore, become the Mandalore, and fighting to get the Darksaber or something. Like, you know, show us how that story works and Mandalorian space. And that's I think, a better series anyway.
Absolutely. And I'd be fine with a Moff Gideon prequel, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
He's done more work than almost or he's done less work than anybody in the Mandalorian series, and he's one of the most badass characters in Star Wars lore.
Just flashes that saber. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like those combs that you think are knives, and you flick it off, and like, that's what he did. He's just like, boop, here you go. Which, very, very cool moment, very cool reveal. Even though this episode was 30 minutes, if that, I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah. Yeah, 5. That is the only issue, and it's the only issue we've brought up is the runtime. This has a lot of, I didn't know Rodriguez did it, but it has a lot of his fingerprints on it with the violence. Yeah. It is a Rodriguez thing. Yeah. Not in like Lava Girl or whatever.
Oh, that's anything coming back. Did you see that?
Yeah. It's got a sequel. Not that
and Pedro
stuff,
Pascal's but, in it.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. But everything else has been not ultra violent, but has a bit of violence in it. That's his kind of forte. Mm-hmm. So you could see his work in it. And I think we did a great job. And I think that the show, I don't think there are people saying it's a throwaway or it's a one-off or whatever. It's a filler. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to me. Because you have the return of Boba Fett. How can that be filler?
Yeah, but that was teased in episode one where everyone was hoping for it.
Yeah, like, you can't call that filler. Boba Fett came back, and Boba Fett came back and did what you wanted Boba Fett to do since the first time you've ever seen him. Like, that's how we wanted Boba Fett to act. We hear all the stories, but now he comes back. Before he has the suit on, is just whipping people's asses. So,
yeah, that was like a Shaolin monk just going out there and destroying people. Which Temuera Morrison still got that it, regardless. Spike. He was awesome in this. He was the shining star. I think coming up, maybe next episode, I want to say it's an Edgar Wright directed episode. It's either Edgar Wright or Peyton Reed. It's somebody who either did Ant-Man or was supposed to do Ant-Man. Okay. So that's. And with Bill Burr being in the focal point of the episode, I could see like Edgar Wright doing it, and it's like a heist.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what happens. You ready to get into the spirit of Christmas?
Sure.
All right. Sure. So we're gonna spoil another movie that probably nobody's gonna see. Although, I will say, I highly enjoyed this movie.
I had a good time. A better time than I thought or wanted to.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we're going to review Fat Man, a movie that had more jiu-jitsu in it than a movie called Jiu-Jitsu. So there's that.
Yeah.
But according to IMDb, here's your plot. A rowdy, unorthodox Santa Claus is fighting to save his declining business. Meanwhile, Billy, a neglected and precocious 12-year-old, hires a hitman to kill Santa after receiving a lump of coal in his stocking. And that very much is the entire plot of this movie. And I love it.
It's well, that blurb is like what you would write for a Lifetime movie.
Yeah. Yep.
Instead of
like a Hallmark Christmas.
Yeah, instead of a movie where there's gunfights everywhere, an assassin. That's the weird thing is you could accidentally like, oh well, I'm not gonna watch it. It sounds like every other Christmas movie. No, somewhere. Yeah. Say, you know, a lump of coal and assassins or something. So we know what's going on. I turns out, look, this is what I was talking about earlier. Everybody knows what Mel Gibson said and did. And then, you know, he kind of fell off the deep end, which is perfectly okay to do. You could have your moments and have your, you know, and you could have your tough times and come back and try to make a comeback, and that's fine. But I don't ever remember him saying sorry. That's the
I don't. I think there was like a half-assed apology, like from his agent.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, well, that doesn't count. I loved Mel Gibson. I love Mel Gibson movies. Every single one.
Passion
I ever
of the Christ
seen.
Is your favorite one.
Almost every single one. But up until like Lethal Weapon, they're unbelievable. Might be my like at one point, maybe my all time besides Rocky and stuff like that. Like best action. I like that more than like Die Hard and stuff like that. Lethal Weapon was my go-to. And then like Payback and
Ransom.
Ransom was awesome.
Give me back my son.
Conspiracy Theorist. You ever see that one?
Mm-hmm.
Where with Julia Roberts.
Yep.
They were all great.
Signs.
Signs was good the first time.
So, yeah, it's one of M. Night's gems, yeah. I guess we could say.
But after the thing with the anti-Semitism and kind of like sexist stuff that he said, and I know he was drunk, but he never went like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. Like,
that, well, when you're drunk, when you're under the influence, sometimes your truth comes out.
Yeah.
More times than not, your truth comes out. So, you know, it's kind of weird that they gave him Santa Claus to play.
Yeah. I mean, I get, this is like his life story though. It's, you know,
yeah.
Like he was doing great. Now he just, you know, he's not producing like he used to. He's made mistakes or whatever. And, there is confusing things in the movie, but it's a very meta take on Santa Claus, in my opinion. But
It's small business.
Yeah,
it's like small business. It's small business Santa, and then Walmart Santa shows up, and Walmart Santa is pumping out toys and pumping out more goodies than small town Santa. And now the government comes in and says, "Listen, we've got this subsidy. We're going to offer you, but it's a work for hire situation where you get all your little friends." And you're going to build control panels for our jets.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think they made a lot of smart choices with that. Like, they didn't have them make weapons because that would have been going too far. It's like, mm-hmm. look, just make control panels, which I wonder how many control panels they have to make. How many jets are they putting out? Because, you know, the elves can like make...
A ton.
Yeah, the elves can make billions of presents in a year. I mean... Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but
and they broke down the elf metabolism, the elf diet, sleep schedules, which I thought was pretty cool. This kind of had, it's very weird. It kind of had a rated R Tim Allen version of the Santa Claus to me.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if Scott Calvin is new to the game, whereas Kris Kringle in this one is an OG in the game, but still having the same problems, needs to understand what the elves are doing. You know, he runs on cookies, which is great. Like, it felt like a Christmas movie. It had the tropes, right? Like, Santa goes to the bar. He cock blocks the guy who's going to cheat on his wife.
But the Christmas aspect of it is done in the first 15 minutes. Like,
no. I got so many. Like, so when Walton Goggins.
The actual Christmas moment is over. Like, he delivers all the presents. He gets shot while delivering presents. And then,
we're at post-Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets, like, a bunch of buckshot.
Yeah.
It's like, some kids over Missouri, I peppered my sleigh. did you catch when Walton Goggins, who plays the bounty hunter, did you catch when he was at the Chinese restaurant and they put the duck on his table with his head? Did you immediately think Christmas Story?
Yeah.
So did I. I was like, okay, kudos to you guys. Like, the directors are brothers. I believe they are called the Nelms Brothers, which is the name of the drugstore that Walton Goggins goes into. And they did a great job on this. Like, they made fun. Yeah, it was very like John Wick meets Bad Santa.
Well, this is the thing. Although he is an unapologetic at this point, anti-Semite and all these other things, Mel Gibson has always been and is a really, really good actor.
I saw The Beaver. He was pretty good in that.
Yeah, like, despite himself, he's a great actor. You know, you know. And there was a lot of great actors in this movie, too. Walter Goggins. I love Walter Goggins. I don't think he gets enough action. I don't think he's out there enough. Because he's got a face that's meant to steal scenes. Not like he's exceptionally like good looking or anything. It's just something about him.
He's like Neil McDonough.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, you see their face and you're like, oh, scumbags on the screen right now.
Yeah. But Neil
McDonough. You know all hell's about to break loose.
Neil McDonough, you think, oh, he's probably a scumbag in real life. Goggins is like, oh, he plays a good scumbag, but he's probably a nice guy in real life. At least I do. Yeah. But he steals scenes easily, and he does a great job of stealing scenes in this movie.
Yeah, I think so too. He was the shining star, and I think he should have been billed as the lead because he was in more scenes than Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was kind of a background player in this, and I think that was by design. You know, you have Santa Claus, but you also have Mel Gibson, and he's not the most relatable person right now. He's not everybody's favorite. So you surround him with good actors. The kid, Chance Hurstfield, was great as this little scumbag Billy who's torturing his friends because he loses at the science fair. Santa's wife, Marianne Jean Baptista, was fantastic.
Yeah.
I know her from Without a Trace, but she's been in a ton of stuff. She was great. Kind of weird to see post-sex Santa.
Yeah,
that scene stuck out to me. I was like, oh, all right, Santa's down for milk and cookies. And so we had that. But Walton Goggins, I love the storytelling of this movie. You have Santa's story, but you have like Billy's story, who he's a piece of shit. This kid's awful.
Yeah,
he's neglected, but he's a piece of shit. Like, he's stealing his grandmom's money to hire hitmen to torture a 12-year-old girl and then to kill his childhood idol. Then he's trying to kill his grandma with fentanyl in her milk. So, like, we know how bad this kid is. He's, like, permanent naughty list. And then Walton Goggins, who plays Jonathan Miller, who we find out his name at the at one of the last scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
He has a beef with Santa, too, that, like, we just think he got shitty toys. But the whole time it was because he got one toy and he kept asking for impossible gifts. He viewed Santa as God.
Yeah, basically. Which
he was like the American Pickers of like Santa, like Santa swag. Yeah. Like, he's buying toys off of kids. He's got like a collection of Santa Claus made in North Pole toys. So I thought like the interweaving of all the storylines really worked. I thought that was it was great storytelling from these guys. Yeah.
All right. So let me ask, do people know about Santa? Or only certain people know about Santa,
like that he's alive.
Yeah,
I don't think so. At first, I was like, everyone's aware that he's legitimately Santa Claus, but then we get to like the end of the movie where Goggins goes to the post office, and the postmaster says, "I only know him as Chris," so they don't know his name.
Well, there is a secret.
So they just know him as this old fat man who drives a red Ford.
Yeah. There is like this secret, like, you even say it. There's a secret postal code or post where, you know, they crate up the letters and send it to him. There was like, that's where I had a few issues trying to figure it out. Like, there was these meta things, like, he knew about everybody, which I thought, you know, it's kind of neat how they threw that in there. He knew who everybody was. But
like when he's talking to the suits from the feds?
Yeah, like when he's
you were on the blacklist for a while.
It could have gone either way there or something like that.
Yeah. I think his name was Colin.
So when people are introduced to him, they're not like that shocked that Santa exists. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird how they it's not like, who knows? I don't know. Only certain people, like this kid, knows that there's a Santa.
Because he's a kid and he still believes in it,
right?
But then Goggins knows that Santa's around because he's kind of hunted Santa from age 8 and procured all those toys. I think the only people who knew Santa was that inner cabal. You had the priest, you had the postmaster that was in the circle in the house, not the one from the post office, and then you had the government. So I think that's who knows, and like the military kind of was briefing the people that were going in, but I think other than that it's more of a myth,
right? I think so
and they too. Just think that this guy, you know, this guy Chris has been around for a while and he knows everybody, because like the one guy, the trucker, he was like, how the hell do you know me? And he's like, listen, just I've been around. He's like, okay. He believed it, bought his beer, and told him to piss off. So I think he's still a myth, but people who still have faith, and that's why Spirit was down, because he couldn't give anything.
Right,
and people are being bad because they don't believe in him. I think that's why he, you know, that's, I think the only people that knew were that small group of people and like children.
Yeah. There is some story there that I would like them to like get into is how old is Santa in this? Like, when did he seems to have a bit like there is some kind of code or way to get out of the coat and it, you know, he's been people have tried to assassinate him before, all kinds of stuff that I want to get into. And there should be, it'd be nice to see like a sequel or a prequel with some flashbacks to him getting the coat somehow. It's not all fun. Well, even in like the Santa Claus, Santa's got to die, which is kind of dark, but
yeah.
But how does he get it? It seems like Santa's got to learn how to fight a little bit to get get the coat, be able to carry it. So,
yeah, and obviously wield handguns and shotguns.
Yeah,
you know, it's that fight scene at the end was fantastic.
Yeah,
where like Walton Goggins has the AR-15, he's just blasting away at Santa. Santa's he gets shot. Did you think Santa was dead? When he got shot in the face
for a second. I thought he was dead. I like how Mrs. Claus winds up killing him finally, how she's got it. I did think he was dead. And when he came back and he's eyeless at the end of the movie, I got a real... Yeah. I like how they shot that too, how they kept the eye in the dark until he came forward.
It was very Dark Knight Two-Face reveal.
Yeah, but to me, it had an Odin feel.
Yeah.
And sometimes, too. You know, Santa, they say, you know, Odin is Santa. The myth is taken from Odin, and because it could be Norse, but it had a very, one-eyed man, or, you know, whatever they call Odin, the one-eyed king or whatever. It was a good scene. I guess eventually he heals up. I don't know if he will though, because he's got scars. I don't know if his eye will come back.
Well, we saw the flashback to, or the flash forward to where they were getting ready to start the next year's run, and he's got the black eye patch on. So maybe he's just like, it's Captain Santa now, and he's a he's a pirate.
Yeah.
But overall, for this movie, I love that they didn't kill you with the prequel and the backstory.
Right.
I love that it takes place in a week span, and I thought that was smart. I do think it opens up the door for a prequel to Fat Man, and I think it opens up the door to a sequel because I want to see Santa torture that little boy.
I'll tell you what it did. It got me very interested into the Santa lore-ness, and I always liked the Santa lore.
Yeah.
More than Santa coming to town, saving, delivering bread, whatever. It's stupid to me. The rules and the lore, like, what's the claymation one, everybody, with Burl Ives?
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, or a year without Santa?
No, it's the one where he starts out skinny and he gives kids.
And they outlaw the toys?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's Santa Claus is coming to town. I watched it last night.
That's probably my all-time favorite because they give you his entire backstory, like how he became Kris Kringle into Santa. I like that stuff. And this, it seems like there is some kind of legend to it or lore, and it's a lot harder than we give him credit for. I think the sequel to this, here's where we start doing our world building that we do is he said he's going to be proactive. I think that's the sequel is him like going out there and saying, no, Santa's real. You need the Christmas spirit or else we're going to, so
it's like vote or die.
I kind of like that idea. It's kind of the evil Santa that we see in like all the other evil Santa movies. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, me too. So let's go to our rating. I will preface this with mine lost a star because Mel Gibson's an asshole.
Yeah.
So I felt bad giving him money because I think he's a piece of shit now. You know what I mean? Given where his stance is. So I'm going to give it a 3. It was a 4. It's a 4 movie based without Mel Gibson. If you get rid of Mel Gibson, this is a 4 because of the story and what we've mentioned. But because Mel Gibson is Santa, it's a 3 for me.
On Walton Goggins' deranged assassin alone, I think makes up for a lot of Mel Gibson's downfall. So, I'm right there with you. 3. I preface this by saying I don't know if Mel Gibson has ever really came out and said he's sorry. And I think that would go a long way if, you know, an apology was out there. But as far as I know, it's not. And you got to, you know, it does suck giving them money. But like I said, despite all that, I enjoyed myself and I had a good time watching this. So,
yeah, had this been like, like a Jeff Bridges movie, I think it would have been a 4 if he had played Santa. I mean, even if you, Tim Allen's done some pretty bad stuff in his life, and, he's got some crazy political views, but I feel like he would have done a better job in this. Like, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell. Yeah. As I said, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's, Christmas Chronicles, which eventually we might get to, but we'll go 3 there, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah.
That's our episode. I thought we were going to torture ourselves for 2 back-to-back weeks with Jiu-Jitsu and then this. And this was a fun little movie. And it's sitting at like an 83 on Rotten Tomatoes for fan score.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
So there's that. And I don't think it's because of Mel Gibson. I think everybody else did a fantastic job in this. And there is definitely a story there. So 3 for us. Go watch it and let us know what you think. Go on social media, Galaxy Wars Podcast. Support Active Geek every Wednesday. And we'll be back next week with a fun movie. Maybe the Christmas Chronicles. Maybe we get freaky and we watch the movie Freaky with Vince Vaughn and the little girl, Catherine Newman, who goes out there and becomes a body-swapping comedy. So I'd like to see that. But we'll get out of here. Here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.